Here's Gaffney. And a little bit of a cutback. Breaks that first tackle loose. End zone. Touchdown, Stanford.
This will be his 19th attempt because it's a 34-yarder. The right hash, he curls it in. They lead the Spartans 10-0 with a minute 40 remaining in our first quarter.
So here is the first and goal for the Spartans, and here's Langford behind Pendleton. A great block. Touchdown, Michigan State. Trouble. Intercepted. Bad decision by Cook. 10-5. Touchdown, you know who, Kevin Anderson. Cook with plenty of time. Can't find a receiver. And caught. Touchdown to fullback.
32-yarder for the tie, and it's from the left hash.
Dead on again. An impressive freshman. Power with Langford, and again. Fumble! Cardinal pounces down on it. Let's see. They've got it. Nickel Blitzer picked up. Touchdown! Tony Lippitt! Play action. And sacked. Back at the 29-yard line by Denzel Drone. 39-yard attempt. And this one curling in for Jordan Williamson.
He won't go anywhere. He won't go anywhere. Michigan State stops Stanford and stuffs them at the line of scrimmage. And the Spartans are on their way to a win in the Rose Bowl.
All right. Hit it!
From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Welcome to a very special Rose Bowl celebrating edition of Current Sports. I am Matt Ludke, filling in for Al Martin. Al, of course, is still in transit back to East Lansing and the cozy confines of WKAR. But it's okay. I've got the party lights going in the studio here. We will be breaking down yesterday's classic statement program Spartan win, taking a quick look into our crystal balls to get a glimpse at the future of the program, and of course, taking your calls about what the win meant to you, what players, plays, or coaches stood out to you, and where you see Coach D'Antonio and company taking this program in the coming years. Now, before I start nerding out and probably shedding a few tears of joy throughout the show today, and recapping my favorite moments of the 100th granddaddy of them all, our own Al Martin was kind enough to join WKAR's Peter Wharf at the crack of dawn Pacific time and let us know how wonderful things looked over in sunny Pasadena.
Al, I'm sure you're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed this morning at, 6:07?
I tell you what, it is exactly 6:07 right now, Peter. I just literally just start wiping the crust out of my eyes. Good morning, brother.
Good morning, my friend. How are you this morning?
I am very, very well. I got to tell you what, Peter, it was quite the moment last night to be down there at the Rose Bowl and experience that moment. From everything from that final play, the final play had to be my highlight. Of course, that 4th-and-1 stop with Kyler Ellsworth. When that moment happened, Peter, and they got the stop and they realized that they had won the Rose Bowl, chills went up my spine. It was like we were down on the field. They let the media on the field 5 minutes before the game ended, and we were down there watching that moment and seeing D'Antonio pump his fist. It was, I mean, my ears are still ringing from that moment alone, and it was the first time I actually got chills up my spine. The first time I've ever covered a game and got chills. It was unbelievable, Peter.
Well, everybody back here in East Lansing had those chills too, Al, and it was wonderful to follow you vicariously online and see you standing on the rows in the center of the field after the game. And that play by Kyler Ellsworth, is, as you said, you couldn't write a more perfect ending to a dream season script than that play at the end of the game. But it was certainly a team effort throughout this entire 60 minutes of play, everything firing exactly when it needed to.
Right. That's very well put right there, Peter. That's the thing that the players echoed. I mean, when we talked to them after the game right there on the field, I mean, they talked about how this the chemistry on this football team is just amazing. You know, and a lot of that has to do with a lot of senior-laden guys that have been with each other for years. And this has been the goal. This is the goal. Like you talked about Mark D'Antonio, completion. And he talked about the number seven.
Mm-hmm.
You know, D'Antonio being, this being his seventh season and getting here, it all comes full circle. And that's what it was about today. I mean, it was about standing, you know, right side by side, being a Spartan dog, if you will. They bring up that a lot. And just being a gladiator, and they always compliment it. Even if you talk about any individual play, you know, out there, you know, when you try to talk to Tony Lippett about, you know, his touchdown, you know, in the Rose Bowl, you say, well, it's not even me, it's my team. You know, they always talk about the team, the team, the team, and it's something that echoes throughout that entire team, Peter. And that's what makes this group so special. They deflect the individual awards or accolades.
That's right. You can, as we begin to break down the game in the next few minutes, Al, you can look at defense, the offensive line, our offensive backs, Cook and Langford. Of course,
yeah.
The no-fly zone. Our kicking game and our special teams all delivering at exactly the right key moment. So let's start a little bit in our breakdown with the first quarter of the game. It was Stanford's quarter, but MSU survived.
Right, they did. They did. You know, I think survive is one of the key words throughout this game. But you know what, Peter? That's something that really has been impressive as a scene, especially if you look at this entire season, you know, at the middle of the season when they found out that, you know, when they really, after I think that Notre Dame game was the turning point. And, you know, everyone brings up the moment. If you remember back to that Notre Dame game where Cook was actually pulled out the game and they put in Andrew Maxwell, and we all know what happened. The drive stalled, and you know, you could chalk up the loss for MSU, the only loss of the season. That was really a turning point for Michigan State right there, and you know, it really, you know, put in the concrete that okay, Cook is a guy we got to stick with him. We got to go through the growing pains because he still is a young quarterback. The thing that's so impressive with Cook, though, if you look at it, especially last night, Peter, and looking at that game, you know, especially when you know he wasn't as accurate as we've seen him in the past, but Cook has a short memory, which is the most special thing about him. Even when he threw the pick six, you know, which was a terrible play, he's being rushed, he just tosses the ball up. Clearly a sophomore quarterback mistake, but he just brushes it off. And that's the biggest thing about Cook, you know. He brushes it off and looks forward to the next play and says, okay, you know, I may have, you know, made a big boo-boo there, but, hey, I'm going to go out of here next play and just settle in. And that's what he did. And we saw that throughout this entire game. The defense stepped up when it needed to. The stars aligned when they needed to. I tell you that, Peter.
Is that Cook's reaction sort of what people mean, do you think, when they talk about mental toughness?
Yes, that's exactly what you mean. And it's so impressive because, you know, here's a guy who – especially at the beginning of the season and the fiasco that we talked about, when you look at the MSU offense, they didn't know who their quarterback was going to be. You know, Cook was competing with two or three other guys, you know, and finally, you know, when they settled in on the guy, it said, okay, we'll see if, and me and you talked about this, Peter, if you would have told me, looking at the very beginning of this season and how this team, you know, there were so many question marks on the offensive end, if you would have told me they would go to the Rose Bowl and let alone win the thing, I would have laughed at you so hard and said you're crazy, you know. But like I said, I mean, you know, just having that game-by-game mentality, which is so cliche, I know that, but D'Antonio talks about just taking it. They all count one. He says that all the time. And that's exactly how they progressed. And that's the mentality, that mental toughness of a sophomore quarterback to be so young like that and to have a short memory. That is so impressive, Peter.
Another moment of terror for MSU, an oh-no moment followed by mental toughness, was that Jeremy Langford fumbled, knocking on the door, just about to put a crucial score into the end zone near the end of the game. But then he was able to turn it around as well.
Right, exactly. He also had that short memory that we talk about. Yeah, I mean, and that play was, you know, just Langford not wrapping up the ball, not being, you know, he had a great game. He brushed it off, and that's another thing that's so impressive because, you know, the backs that have stepped up, specifically Langford, he's been unbelievable. You know, he's a hard runner, north-south guy, and the thing that I really, really noticed and stood out to me about Langford is he's so patient, Peter. You know, when he grabs the ball, he's not making a quick move and deciding on it right then and there. He kind of, you know, dips around a little bit once he receives the ball, looks at what holes are there, And that offensive line did a really, really good job of opening things where they needed to be. And Langford sees it so well, and he just goes with it. You know, he's such a patient runner. I think that's the key to MSU's run game. Langford has a bright, bright future.
Al, just a couple of more questions for you and your impressions. That air of quiet confidence and determination that's shown by our MSU players, that's got to be coming to a great extent from Coach D'Antonio's attitude, don't you think?
Exactly, exactly. And that's something the players always talk about. You know, when I'm in the locker room, I was expecting, players to be, which they were. Of course, as you heard, Drummond going nuts, you know, at the very beginning of the show. You guys played that. But the thing is, you know, when you talk to these players, you know, about how does it feel to win the Rose Bowl, I was expecting them to go just absolutely bonkers, Peter. But the thing is, you know, especially when you talk to guys like, really stood out was, you know, Tony Lippitt and Danico's Allen. When Danico's Allen, talking to him on the field, I mean, talking to Danico's Allen on the field, which he had a huge game. Danico's, I mean, he was everywhere, flying everywhere, getting tackles left and right. There's this calm confidence. Like, they knew this was going to happen. This was supposed to happen. They were already smelling the roses before the game even started. And Coach D, I mean, he made a video. He actually went down to Pasadena before the season even started and addressed the team right there on the field when he just took a random trip to the Rose Bowl. And he made a video that they played at the awards banquet before the season even started. And he said, guys, we're going to come here. We're going to win it. And that mentality has carried them the entire season. So it's already like their mental state was in the moment that they were going to win. And when you have a coach like that who's confident and just he's as cool as the other side of the pillow. I always say that about Mark D'Antonio. I mean, he doesn't get too high. He doesn't get too low. He's just even keel. And when you have a coach with a mentality like that, it bleeds onto the rest of the team, Peter.
All righty. Well, thank you to Peter and Al for that. And seriously, I cannot imagine Al will ever forget being there. Probably the most legendary venue in college football for arguably the best win in MSU program history. So very jealous of Al. Plus he got tan and all that great stuff. But, you know, it's okay. I'll take a Rose Bowl victory in 13-degree East Lansing any day of the week and any year of my life. All right, now before we get into the really good stuff, we got to get you with some headliners because things outside of the Rose Bowl happened in the sports world. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time here because I do want to get back to the good stuff. First off, Jim Schwartz, sayonara. Part of the Black Monday exodus of NFL head coaches, he is no longer the Lions head man. Will not be manning the sidelines for the Lions in 2014, and neither will Lovie Smith. The former Bears coach signs with Tampa Bay. He'll become their new coach. Another new NFL coach, Bill O'Brien, leaving Penn State for the Houston Texans. Now, Jim Schwartz has already been rumored to be the new hire for the Cleveland Browns as their defensive coordinator. He's taking a little step down, but, you know, that couple million dollars in the buyout from the Lions really shouldn't hurt his ego too much, so he'll have that to rest his laurels on. In other news, the other big Michigan sports news, the Winter Classic over at the Big House in Ann Arbor. Of course, the Red Wings find a way to lose a shootout victory. If you had told me that was going to happen before the game, I probably would have believed you, and sure enough, it came to fruition. It seems to be the story of the season, overtime shootout losses. But, you know, they did send an attendance record. Mike Babcock looked awesome in a fedora. It was a great event to watch on TV for sure, except for the very end. But other than that, I mean that stuff pales in comparison to the Spartans winning in Pasadena. Let's get back to that. I want to take your calls. 517-355-9527. Call in, let us know what you thought of the game, things you thought were overlooked, players that, you know, stepped up that you want to acknowledge, plays that you want to look back on, what you think it's going to mean for the program. Maybe you just want to thank Coach D'Antonio and company for giving you a special season. I know I do, because that was the best year I've experienced in my entire life. And I'm so excited for the future. It just, the things they're building here and the things they've already built, it's something to be proud of. And, you know, for a long time, Michigan State football kind of was mired in mediocrity. Now it seems like they're breaking through the national stage to that next level. and beating Stanford 24-20 in the 100th Rose Bowl is a heck of a way to do it. Now, if you'd like to visit and welcome back the Michigan State Spartans to East Lansing, they will be having a welcoming ceremony at the Scandalaris Football Center, which, of course, is right next to the Clara Bell Smith Center, just across the street from Spartan Stadium. That is at the corner of Shaw and Chestnut, and that event will be at 7:40 tonight. They're requesting that you don't go to the Capital Area Airport. Instead, come to the Scandalaris Football Center and celebrate with the MSU team on their Rose Bowl win on campus right by Sparty. Ugh. Just good times, good times. Okay, let's get to it. Let's get to the game. And if you listen to our preview show, I don't want to brag, but Aaron and I were pretty much right on the money. 24-20 win. It was a low-scoring game. It was a grinded-out game. Everyone thought that Stanford would have the upper hand, not only because they're more, you know, quote-unquote battle-tested through the, you know, rough-and-tumble Pac-12, but because they've been there before. Four consecutive BCS bowl games, looking for their second straight Rose Bowl win. And right off the bat, they did take control. A quick drive, 74 yards. They go down the field, score on a Tyler Gaffney 16-yard touchdown run. Of course, the big play was a Kevin Hogan pass to Michael Rector on the second play of the game. Just a bomb down the field that Trey Waynes missed by a hair. By a hair. He's right there. They're always, that's the best thing about Michigan State. When teams get big plays, they almost never go for touchdowns. There's always a guy right there ready to make a play, especially in the passing game. Gosh, it's been a real pleasure watching that defensive backfield all season. I'm going to miss some of the guys who are leaving, but man, the future looks bright with Waynes and Williamson and a host of others ready to step in and fill the gaps going into next season. But Stanford strikes first. They definitely look more comfortable out of the gate. And you'd seen teams all year drive the ball on Michigan State on the first possession of the game. Usually they end in field goals. Stanford's maybe a cut above the teams they've played all year. They end it with a touchdown. And after a field goal made it 10-0, kind of looked dicey, I'm not going to lie. They had a couple of big plays. They had three plays, I believe, for 141 yards. And they only had 305 total. So they hit some big ones, but not nearly enough. So the first quarter, after that Stanford field goal from Jordan Williamson made it 10-0, then Michigan State started to get into the rhythm of the game. Connor Cook and company settled down. Jeremy Langford certainly settled down. He finishes off a nice, lengthy touchdown drive with a 2-yard score to the corner that was aided by a possibly questionable call of pass interference on a pass to McGarrett Kings in the end zone. Aaron, I know you were watching. Do you think that call was valid? And did it? Do you think it really meant anything in the grander scheme of things?
What? The
Kings pass interference call? Yeah. Because you could say it saved the Spartans 4 points.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't know. Just the entire way, the way that they were moving the ball was incredible. Going in, we said, you know, they're gonna struggle to run the ball against Stanford's 3-4 and their, you know, multiple pros, Shane Scove, Trent Murphy, and they did. They struggled to get things going. Langford had a couple of nice runs, but for the most part, he was bottled up. And we said it was gonna be all about Connor Cook. And the guy is tough as nails. He is a gamer. Absolutely, he's a gamer, no doubt about it. When the pressure's on, he seems to respond. He has a career high in passing yards for the second consecutive game. Just so happened to be the two biggest games of the season. But they're firing the ball all over the field. And it looked like, to me at least, throughout the first half, Michigan State looked like the better team. Stanford had the lead. Of course, it was 17-14 at the half because of that big, the pick six. Oh boy, let's just get to that early. Let's get to that. Kevin Anderson on maybe the most questionable throw I've ever seen from Connor Cook. Just kind of lobs it up, goes right to Anderson, who's waiting to take it, and he races 40 yards for a touchdown. And at that point, it's 17-7, and it kind of looked like, oh boy, that could be the play that people don't forget from this game. just an easy score. Stanford has a 10-point lead. There's 2 minutes left before the half. MSU is in hot water at this point. But then, of course, Connor Cook, you know, the guy's made of Teflon. Nothing sticks to him. He's got amnesia or something. I don't know. Short-term amnesia. He just puts things out of his mind and moves on. He came to the sideline. Coach D'Antonio asked him if he was good. He said he was good. They gave a little fist pump. Back on the field he went. That's A, the kind of faith you want a coach to have in his quarterback. B, the kind of faith you want a quarterback to have in himself. And C, when you look at the drive, clearly the type of belief and togetherness that you want in a unit after a potentially catastrophic play to respond with, in my opinion, the biggest drive of the game, which was that two-minute drill, airing it out offense to not, well, at least bring the score closer to 17-14. And it was highlighted by that Benny Fowler pass down the sideline. Just a huge play, and one that, you know, it's tough to imagine Benny Fowler making that play back in September. I mean, him and the receivers in general, and just the passing game in general, they've come such a long way. That would have never, ever, ever been complete last year or at the beginning of this year. They're just a different team. I don't know if it's the confidence, if it came with winning, if it's just what D'Antonio and company have instilled in these players, but they believe they were going to do it. Fowler made a ridiculous catch. I mean, that's a top 10 play in my book. You know, making an adjustment to the ball, getting his hands underneath it, falling to the ground. It was beautiful.
He was falling backwards.
I mean, I don't know how he did it.
I don't know. I don't know if people realize how hard it is to catch a football as you're falling backwards and falling down at the same time.
And how hard it is to, you know, contort your body to your outside shoulder when you're running full speed down the field. Like,
yeah.
That is, the sports science on that play would be mind-boggling, I'm sure.
We'll get on it.
Just incredible. Incredible play by Fowler there. And then, of course, you know, Connor Cook keeping his cool, rolling out, avoiding pressure, and he hits Trevin Pendleton for a 2-yard pass to get it to 17-14. And then they go to halftime, and then the Stanford band does whatever the Stanford band does. Do you want to talk about that for a little bit?
Do we?
You know what? Let's forget it.
We don't even want to give it. Weird.
Long story short, the Stanford band is weird. Eccentric, I guess, would be the nicest way to put it.
Well, for you and I, people our age, people want to say hipster.
Right.
Yes. They're a hipster school band that...
I don't know.
Ugh. If okay. You watched it, you know what we're talking
exactly,
about.
Exactly, yeah. It's no mystery why we are at a loss for words, I guess, with the Stanford band. Okay, 517-355-9527. Give us a call. Now we're at halftime right now. We'll come back. We'll talk about Desmond Howard being a huge troll, but we're going to take a quick break. And before we do, we have a special message from Rose Bowl champion Curtis Drummond.
Man, I thought winning the Big Ten championship was indescribable, but this, man, this crazy to just do this, to accomplish this. It's a lifetime memory. Just seeing the hard work the guys have been putting in all season, man. Just everything coming together at the right time, basically.
What's the most gratifying part of this whole thing?
The most gratifying part? Just being able to bring a W back to Michigan State. We hadn't been here since 88. And we came on a business trip and we handled business, and now it's time to have fun. 2 weeks in a row, 2 games in a row, our linebackers come up big for us at the end of the game. So, I mean, that's just credit to them. Extra film study, Kyler Ellsworth filling in for Max Bullen, doing a great job.
What's the first thing you're going to do to celebrate, man?
We going in our rich homie. Some type of way, we gonna turn up.
Some type of way, it's the first
time
you
play. Some type of way, rich homie Quan.
Go celebrate, baby. My been hustling, trying to make him something. Ain't no telling what he'll do for the paper.
Ain't no telling.
Souffle, I'm straight, I state my plate, shot day. I'm a smooth operator.
I drop top of my wheel, baby.
That car driving make you feel some type of way.
I know you.
That custom brightly make you feel some type of way.
I'm shining,
this bitch young wig got me feeling some type of way.
Okay.
Is it cause my homies rich, you feel some type of way?
Right.
Some type of way, make you feel some type of way.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your fill-in host, Matt Ludke. Of course, filling in for Al Martin, who is still on his way back from sunny Pasadena. Sunny, rosy Pasadena, covered in Spartan green over the New Year holiday. Give us a call, 517-355-9527. Let us know what you thought of the Rose Bowl, how proud you are of the Spartans, anything that stuck out to you that we haven't mentioned or you think hasn't been mentioned enough, where you think the program is headed in the coming years, anything at all, give us a call. Once again, 517-355-9527. But let's get back to it. And, you know, before I go back to the game, that Rich Homie Quan song, it's grown on me. When I first heard it, I wasn't, you know, didn't really grab me, but maybe it's because I've watched like 17 YouTube videos where there's 60 people dancing to it with pure, unadulterated joy, that now it's just, you know, caught on. Now I can't help but love it.
Well, it's not often that you see President Simon and just Mark Hollis dancing,
boogieing
some type of way by Rich Homie Quan.
I mean,
in the locker room after the Rose Bowl.
I feel like it takes a pretty special kind of moment to get President Simon to just start dancing
and yelling. Yeah.
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 It was awesome. It was awesome. You know, and he was there on the field. You know, they told that story multiple times that he would be joining the team in their trip to the Rose Bowl. And there he was during the ESPN interview in the post game. The little cameo with Coach D, but you know what? I'm all for it. It's not often that you have, like, a pretty big-time rapper become, you know, the anthem of a college football team and actually become a part of the team. So I think that's pretty cool. Hats off to MSU. Hats off to Rich Homie Quan. Just hats off to everybody. I have no hats left because they're all off because I am so happy about this Rose Bowl win. Again, give us a call, 517-355-9527. Talk about the Rose Bowl. Talk about whatever you want, but pretty much let's just talk about the Rose Bowl. All right, halftime. Desmond Howard. Oh, Desmond. I know that it's part of the job to kind of elicit reactions, but is there a more unprofessional national pundit than Desmond Howard? I don't think so. He never has anything to really back up what he says. And he constantly hates MSU, and I get it. You know, he went to Michigan. He's still bitter about tripping on, back in, 1990. Desmond, give it a rest. Show us, you know, give us some props. They just won the Rose Bowl. At halftime, he says, you know, Stanford's going to run away with it. He said they were going to win by 17. Even Lee Corso, who had picked Michigan State to start the game, switched his pick to Stanford, which was puzzling to me because while Stanford did lead 17-14 at the half, I think it was clear, and even David Pollack said so on that broadcast, Michigan State looked like the better team. You know, they looked like they were more in control. Connor Cook was doing whatever he wanted. I mean, aside from the horrific pick six, he was moving the ball in big chunks the whole game. And then when you look at the flip side, outside of that opening drive, Stanford's offense really could not get anything going. I mean, you look at some of the numbers in the second half and just some of the drives in the second half, and it's just astounding how well MSU clamped down on Stanford's attack and really how stubborn Stanford looked. Because I feel like everyone in the Rose Bowl, everyone watching around the country could tell after the first quarter, running up the middle against Michigan State, not a great idea. And I know that's their identity. I know that's Stanford football. That's what they've built themselves on. But when something's not working, and it's clearly not working, it's strange to see a team stick with it continually throughout the game as the failures kept piling up and piling up and piling up. So we start the third quarter. Oh, boy. Maybe one of the most overlooked plays, I think, in this whole thing, because Kyler Ellsworth, and we'll get to Kyler, trust me, filling in for Max Bulla, the fourth down stop, obviously enormous, huge play, wins the game, yada, yada, yada. But the offense was just moving the ball, and they come out in the second half. on the second play, they hit Benny Fowler on a hitch route. And Benny kind of, he almost stumbled as he caught it. But then that, I feel like that stumble helped him. The Stanford safety overran it terribly. I don't know what he was doing. Benny cuts inside and just bolts down the field. And I feel like teams don't know how fast and strong Benny Fowler is until he is absolutely destroying their defense. But Ed Reynolds, number 29 for Stanford, who, you know, people were saying is a pro prospect and might go pro after this season, I mean, he was just along for the ride. He had no chance of tackling Benny Fowler. If you go back and look at the replay, Fowler is stiff-arming him for, I don't know, 20 yards. And at the end, Reynolds isn't even the one who makes the tackle. I mean, he slowed him down enough so that his teammates could catch Fowler and actually get him from behind, but if there was nobody else there, Fowler is scoring, and he's putting Ed Reynolds on his butt because he was stronger, he was in better position, and he you could just tell they wanted it more. And I feel like that play exemplified a big part of the game. Now, that huge, it was a 61-yard play. Gets him down into the red zone. The drive eventually stalls, and Michael Geiger, who I'm really sad that he missed that first kick against Iowa. His only miss of the season. He could have been perfect in his freshman year. He's got heavy expectations coming to him next year, but Michael Geiger nails a 31-yarder, knots the score at 17. And then from there on out, when you look at the Stanford drives in the second half, they weren't doing anything. So it's 17s at that point. Take a look at this Stanford drive chart and how things ended. In the second half, on their first possession, they open things up. Kevin Hogan takes a shot downfield to Michael Rector again. Unfortunately, he did not see Trey Waynes, who was hawking the ball. He goes up and basically takes it right out of the Cardinal hand for an interception. Big play. Now, granted, it was a 50-yard bomb, so, you know, it's almost like a long punt. But anytime you get a turnover, that's, you know, what you want. After that, Stanford comes out, almost the end of the third quarter, and have a turnover on downs when they decide to go for it on fourth and three by, guess what, running it right up the gut. Newsflash to David Shaw and company, running up the gut on Michigan State is not a good idea. Unless maybe you're Carlos Hyde, but that's about it. That's the only guy who's had a lot of success there. Turnover on downs, run it up the gut, and guess who? It's Denikos Allen, the savior of the Big Ten championship game. He comes up with another huge fourth down stop. He gets Gaffney in the backfield. Gaffney couldn't do anything after those first couple drives. The next possession, three and out, punt. One after that, punt. One after that, they get a field goal. And then after that, Kyler Ellsworth goes up and over. I've seen many videos where they show that replay and have it linked to I Believe I Can Fly by R. Kelly, which is pretty funny and it is appropriate, and I'll probably watch that over and over and over again later. But Kyler Ellsworth goes up over the top and stuffs the Stanford fullback in the backfield for a loss of yards. I believe it was Hewitt. Yeah, he has one rush for 0 yards. He got stuffed on a fourth and one. But the big play to me on defense, there was just so many things that they did well to stuff Stanford. And, you know, you can second-guess David Shaw all you want. I mean, Kevin Hogan, 10 of 18 for 143 yards and a pick. It wasn't like he was setting the world on fire and that, you know, the Stanford passing attack was a guaranteed success. I mean, the shots downfield they took, I want to say they were, what, 2 for 5 maybe through the game? They had some drop balls. They had some that were just, you know, good coverage by MSU. And a couple of them they hit on. But, of course, they didn't go for those big touchdowns that you kind of need against Michigan State. If you're going to catch them off guard, you better score on that play because you're probably not going to get another opportunity of that caliber for the rest of the game. And they didn't. So you look at that. I mean, Michigan State just took over in the second half. You could tell. They just kind of suffocated that Stanford ground attack. And, you know, Hogan and company could not do enough through the air to make them pay for it. Looking on offense, you can't look any further than Connor Cook. Second consecutive game, he sets a career high in yards, this time 332 versus the best defense he'd play all season. You know, oh, no, you haven't seen a defense like Stanford's. And while they were good, and they definitely made plays, I mean, Shane Scove with the huge fumble on Langford, obviously the interception and the two that they dropped that could have been easy picks for Stanford. We'll overlook those for now because, you know, if they don't catch them, they don't count. So no harm, no foul. But Cook could do basically whatever he wanted. He goes 22 of 36, not terribly accurate. He threw it away when he had to, which I was happy to see. But, man, when they were rolling, they were rolling. And I think it's not just Cook. You know, it takes two to tango in the passing game. And the Spartan receivers stepped up. And it wasn't just one guy, and that was the thing going in. You know, we looked at the rosters, we looked at the breakdowns, and it looked like Stanford had one guy who could really hurt you in the pass game, and that was Ty Montgomery. And he finished with three catches for 21 yards before he left with an injury in, I believe, the third quarter. When you look at Michigan State, however, they have, you know, a nice variety of guys who are going to catch passes. Cook completed passes to 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 different receivers, which is a theme this year. They spread the wealth. It's not just one guy who you have to focus in on. You have to cover the entire unit. Benny Fowler obviously had the two catches we talked about earlier. Tony Lippitt, with the game winning, it turns out, touchdown, a 25-yard strike from Connor Cook. That was a pro play by Cook. You know, he looks off the safety to the right. You can go back and watch that too. The safety definitely jumps to his left, rather. Cook looks him off, comes back to Lippitt, and he just slings it. And you know, people say, oh, Connor Cook, he makes some questionable decisions sometimes, but you need that as a quarterback. You need somebody who is going to trust where his guys should be and make the throws accordingly. He looked to the right, looked back to the left for a split second, and the ball was out. I mean, and that's what you need when you're playing a team like Stanford who has a defense of that caliber. You need to get them out of position to help yourself make big plays, and that's exactly what they did. Lippitt finishes with five catches, 94 yards, and a touchdown. His maturation over the course of this season has been incredible. And people talk about Connor Cook and Jeremy Langford really stepping up and you know, taking the mantle and kind of growing as players, but it goes beyond that. It's a team-wide thing. And that's one of the things that I love about watching this team. They're so balanced. They have so many guys who can hurt you and so many guys who struggled mightily last season who are now coming through, making big plays, and getting big wins, as in the biggest win in, I don't know, easily the last 26 years. You might have to go farther than that to find a bigger win in Michigan State history. Give us a call, 517-355-9527. Let us know what you think about all of it. You know, the defense, Ellsworth, maybe how they played without Bulla. The offense, the program, the coaches, everything came together. A special, special day for Spartan Nation and the Spartan football family. Now, Aaron, when you look at this game, if you had to pick one guy, let's say other than Connor Cook, to be your player of the game, who do you choose and why? Yeah, it's a tough one, and I'm putting you on the spot.
That's a tough question. I mean, when you look at it, you know, defensively, I mean, Ellsworth did things that, as I think you pointed out earlier, he didn't make he didn't do some of the sort of fun festivities that a lot of the other players did, simply right, because he had to look at film. He had to figure things out for the Stanford defense. You know, he's kind of been a backup all year playing special teams, so he didn't really have that sort of linebacker mindset ready to rock and roll like Bulla would have done. It obviously paid off because he was checking guys off at the line, telling them to move right to left multiple times, and it worked. He was communicating with the defense. I don't know if he was the sole leader on the defense as far as, you know, making sure everyone was in the right positions. I think everyone just sort of came together, was communicating. He might be at my pick. I mean, you can't really pick a wide receiver because all they just sort of came together. And I mean, he, like you were saying, Cook could have thrown to anyone, which he did. But if I guess if I'm going to be forced to pick one person, because that's what you're doing to me, I'm going to go ahead and pick Ellsworth simply because, I mean, I know a lot of people are picking him, but, you know, the reality is he did a lot for that defense. He filled in a short amount of time like he was supposed to. Then he got the biggest stop, you know, of the game, obviously, in that 4th-and-1. I mean, when you make the biggest play of the game,
yeah,
you kind of are the biggest player of the, you know, the biggest player of the game.
No, I hear you, and you're probably right. And all week long, that was, ever since, you know, the team touched down in California and announced that Max Bulla did not make the trip, that was the big thing. You know, the line for the game opened at, I believe, Stanford -3, and it climbed up all the way to Stanford -7.
Yeah, what was that?
I mean, I understand. Well, this is why, because Max Bulla was out, and, you know, people who don't know the program and aren't familiar with what they've built, they kind of associate the success with the star player, and Max Bulla was the star player. You know, he was the heart and soul of the D, as they say. And people kind of took that and ran with it. And you know, whether you chalk it up also to, you know, Stanford's experience and BCS games and yada, 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 that's irrelevant. But, you know, the line definitely crept up. People were thinking Stanford was probably going to roll. And most of it was because, you know, when people were predicting, you know, national pundits predicting, it all came down to, well, you know, Stanford's got more experience and Max Bulla's out. So I don't think Michigan State's defense is going to be quite up to par. But, I mean, that could not have been less of the case. They were absolutely fantastic, especially after that first quarter. Stanford racked up 305 total yards. They had half of that in the first quarter. In the last three quarters, the defense held Stanford to 159 yards. And that's still, you know, that's including the, what was it, 51-yard pass to Devin Kajusti, who has... Poor Brent Musburger had to say that name a lot yesterday. But, you know, they hit a couple of big plays, but other than that, it was just nothing. You know, Tyler Gaffney finishes with 91 yards rushing and a touchdown. He had 67 yards in the first quarter. That guy had 21 touchdowns this year, 1,600 yards over the season. And you hold him to 67 yards in geez, not even 67. What is that? 24 yards in three quarters of the biggest game of his life in the last game as a Stanford Cardinal? That's insane. They are the number one defense in the country with darn good reason, and they proved it yesterday. This is a team that people thought would be, you know, out-tough them. Oh, Stanford, they've got the best offensive line in the nation. They're going to blow Michigan State off the line of scrimmage. Not the case. Mekhijah Reynolds, Tyler Hoover, Shalik Calhoun, who didn't have a big game, you know, with his name being called, but was certainly around the play and, you know, didn't break his assignment at all, it seemed like. Marcus Rush, who will forever be underrated, I don't care what you say, the guy just does his job, gets little to no recognition. He's been maybe the unsung hero of the season for me. They all stepped up. They took it to Stanford, you know, the last play of the game. Kyler Ellsworth making that big over-the-top stop. And he said he knew it, and you spoke to that. You know, you said he was watching film while most of the guys were out, you know, participating in Rose Bowl festivities. And he even said, leading up to the play, I saw that Stanford's line was in very tight splits, you know, not ordinary, you know, extraordinary, I guess, extraordinarily tight splits. And he knew that the only way to make the play was to go over the top. And he does, times it perfectly, meets up with Hewitt in the air, and crushes him for a gain of zero.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot since you put me on the spot.
Yep, do it.
If you're the Stanford coach, yes. It's 4th-and-1.
Oh, my gosh. Play.
Are you calling what they called?
Heck no.
Because here, I'm probably almost 99.99% of the people are thinking run. Including the entire coaching staff, yep. Every single player. Now, if you look at the replay, Michigan State did have, I think they had Drummond and I forget who else. They had him played back slightly.
Yep.
But they creeped up before the ball was hiked.
Absolutely.
All you needed to do is get one guy, I mean, a slight play action, because that play action, everyone would have bid on it.
Yeah.
Nice, decent play action. Everyone would have bid on it. One guy goes open. You now, only need 1 yard.
The problem with the play action is towards the end of the game, I feel like they called at least one, and Drone just pretty much planted Hogan
in
the ground.
No,
I mean,
what I'm saying,
guys were coming through at such, you know, so quickly that I don't know if a slow developing play action would work.
Well, you do the same formation as they had. Mm-hmm. I say you stick with that formation to sort of fake that, like you said.
Right.
Ellsworth saw that, and he's like, oh, man, I know this is going to be a
this
run.
This is going right up the gut, over
going
the
right
top.
I'm going over the top. A quick play, because you can do play action pretty quick. A nice quick play action. I mean, that I thought that's what Stanford would have done. I went back. I read an article. Apparently, Stanford's coach isn't too much on taking chances like that. He likes to
evidently.
Play. Apparently, he has a history of sort of, you know, doing what, you know, everyone's going to expect him to do, or what, you know, everyone's expecting the team to do. That would have been the one shot, because if you don't do it, the game is over. If you don't get the first down, the game's over. I mean, you might
last play of the year. Why hold anything back?
Your running game really hasn't, like you said, they weren't doing anything the second half.
No,
nothing at all. And then you give it to the guy that did he even touch the ball the entire game?
Was his one carry.
One carry. There you go. I mean, I know people aren't talking about it, but I mean, I think that was kind of a coaching mistake. I think that was a bad call. I mean, they even the commentators kind of mentioned that it was kind of, they were perplexed at that call. I honestly wouldn't have ran it.
I agree. And you know, you look at Stanford and what they like to do is line up and beat you. And that's what they've done all season. That's what got them to the Rose Bowl. I can see the sense of sticking to your guns, but to answer your original question, if I am the Stanford head coach, the play I call is the classic fullback fake halfback pitch. Because if you looked at the alignment, everyone knew it was coming into the middle, like you said. They did have Drummond kind of as that, almost like a safety just in the back, just in case, you know, just in case things got outside. But let's say you fake it to the fullback and then give a pitch to the outside to Gaffney, your senior, your star running back. You would think he'd be able to try and, you know, muscle his way to a yard near the sideline. Obviously, they did not do that. You know, they believed in what they believed in. They believed in their team. They thought they were going to make the play. I mean, Gaffney after the game even said, you know, we tried to, it was a battle of wills. Everyone in the stadium knew what was going to happen, and they just got the better of us, and that's what happened. All right, we have a caller here. Ray, you are on line one. Go right ahead.
Happy New Year, my friend.
Happy New Year, Ray. How you doing?
I hope you had a nice Christmas, too.
Oh, I sure did.
I'll tell you, I was so happy at Christmas time to see the Michigan Bullies getting beat up by Kansas State, and then get to watch your Spartans get down 10-0. It looked like they were going to get massacred, and the heart they showed coming back. You got the defenses that Michigan used to have. Thank you so much for the last 5 out of 6 years to beat the Bullies up and to take over the state.
Well, I'm not sure I can take credit for it, but you're welcome.
No,
Ray.
No, I know you can't. The team, I'm.
I know.
I'm trying to
I know.
Give them credit for thanking them for beating the Bullies up 5 out of 6 years since Michael Hart made his little statement that you're like your little brother. They always come back and beat you. You should have beat them 6 out of 6. They only got one lucky victory against you.
I hear you. You don't have to remind me, Ray.
Well, I hope this helps recruiting. Do you think you guys are going to do a lot better recruiting than Michigan this year?
Well, maybe not this year. And honestly, you could say that they've done better in recruiting than Michigan over the last 5 years because they've put out, you know, better product on the field.
Right.
But in terms of just an uptick in, like, getting guys who are rated higher, I think those dominoes are going to start to fall in 2015. I think 2014, it's kind of set in stone at this point. There's a couple of late guys who could go either way, one of which is Malik McDowell, who used to be a heavy Michigan lean, and now he's listed as top three, and it's Michigan State, I think Ohio State, and Florida State. So
where's he? What state's he from?
He's from Michigan.
Okay.
He's a big D lineman. He's a very talented prospect. But if Michigan State can start to get guys like him and start to turn the tide going forward, I mean, you got to know these kids in high school. This is all they've seen. You know, they've seen is Michigan State becoming this premier program.
Well, you know,
while Michigan sort of treads water.
Right. You know why they're treading water? Because they're prideful and arrogant. They're very prideful.
You said it, but I'm not going to disagree.
Oh, I will. I worked down there 18 years. All your money, pride, and arrogance won't get you into heaven, but it could get you into hell. And they're very arrogant and prideful. They don't want to talk to me at all since they fired me. Then they revoked my season tickets, but that's all right. They've lost 43 games in 7 years. You can say it's coincidental, but they've lost over six a year. That's they usually go 40 years to lose that many games.
I hear you. Ray, thank you so much for your call.
And God bless you, buddy. I hope you can get that recruit there. And, you know, Michigan's got coaches like Lloyd Carr, Rich Rodriguez, and this new puppet they got. They like to get little puppets that are yes men for them, Brady Hoke. But you guys just keep beating them up.
I hear you, Ray. And, you know, thank you again for your call. And I have compared Michigan to the Dallas Cowboys in the past, and it kind of looks more and more true the more you think about it. You know, Dave Brandon obviously playing the Jerry Jones role, Brady Hoke as Jason Garrett, and poor Devin Gardner as I don't even know how to describe Tony Romo at this point, but let's not get off track. Now, getting back to the Rose Bowl, you know, winning this huge game, the national stage, and you know, talking about where the program is headed. Stanford had become the gold standard of the Pac-12. They, you know, they've gone to four straight BCS Bowls, two straight Rose Bowls. They are the cream of the crop in the Pac-12. And, you know, Michigan State will get another shot at the other team vying for that title in the Pac-12 next year when they play at Oregon early in the season. But, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. To beat Stanford on a national stage in the 100th granddaddy of them all, you know, the Rose Bowl, the most prestigious bowl game there is, it's a huge deal. And, you know, they've kind of built this program in, you know, the 7 years of the D'Antonio era, and it's been building slowly. It's been a slow build, you know, steps each year getting better and better and better. Hiccup last year, and now look where they are. And while they've emerged as a regional power, I think it took till yesterday to really put themselves on that national level. And, you know, it's one thing to make the Rose Bowl. It's another thing to go in and win it. I mean, look at what Wisconsin had done. They had gone to three straight, couldn't get it done, and they're still kind of just a Big Ten power. They're not a national power. This win gives Michigan State the opportunity, not just in terms of, you know, visibility to recruits and just visibility to people around the country, but really just to that perception, maybe in the polls. You know, next season, they're going to be pretty highly ranked. Yes, they lose players on both sides of the ball, but they return at least a part of the core on either side. They're going to be a highly touted team. They have a shot at being ranked high enough to maybe sustain a loss early in the season and still be in the running for that top four playoff spot. You know, their sights are now set a notch higher to a national championship level. I mean, geez, you look back and all it took was a couple of bogus pass interference calls, and maybe they're talking national championship now. Maybe we're just previewing a game against Florida State instead of, you know, looking at what could have been if not for that hosing, rather, in South Bend. But, you know, you look at what this could do for the program, I think it could catapult it to even greater success. And it makes me so happy to say that because I really think it's true, and I think the way that things have been done here, it's the right way. You know, it's not a one-man team, and, you know, what better example than losing your senior captain, 40 consecutive starts, the heart and soul of the defense, going to play the best team you've played all year, and you still win. It's incredible to have experienced this season, to have watched this team grow, to watch the program grow, to the point where now, I mean, Urban Meyer's going to have his hands full in the Big Ten East. And, you know, you look at who maybe Penn State could hire. You wonder if Michigan's ever going to get their act together. The Big Ten East could be Ohio State and Michigan State every year. that could be the perennial matchup in that division going forward for the foreseeable future. I mean, it's amazing that they've kind of just positioned themselves to take steps each season and get better and better and better. They're going to start competing on a national stage. I mean, they already are. They did yesterday, and they did well. They're going to start competing on a national stage for recruits, for headlines, for everything. And you know, the other thing, people talk about this Texas job. Oh, Texas wants to interview Mark D'Antonio. I think that's a good thing. That's what you want. I don't think D'Antonio's going to go there. Heck, I know he's not going to go there. He's staying put. But, you know, what better kind of advertising for your program than, hey, look, the richest, wealthiest program in the country, one of the most prestigious jobs in the nation, is taking a long, hard look at Michigan State's coach, and he's going to stay put. What does that tell you about the things that they're doing in East Lansing? Other than, wow, they're doing an amazing job. It's just everything is trending in the right direction right now. And the way that they've built things, I know they lose a lot going forward, but man, it just seems like they're always going to have guys who are ready to step in, carry the mantle, and move forward. And I think the future is just ridiculously bright. I'm excited. I'm excited to see what the future holds. I have never been prouder to be a Spartan and to watch, you know, living and dying, you know, throughout my childhood, adolescence, and into my college years, living and dying with Michigan State football and having some rough periods growing up. But now it's all worth it. It was such a special win, and I'm looking forward to see what the future holds for D'Antonio and company. Ugh, it's just been an amazing ride. Now, my final thoughts here before we go, I have to get this in because I don't think it gets mentioned enough. Sportsmanship in sports. If there's a team you want to beat, if there's a team you want to emulate in defeat, it is Stanford. I have never seen or heard a classier group of players and coaches than I have with Stanford losing that game. They had nothing but good things to say about Michigan State. There was no bitterness. They just lost a heartbreaker, and there was nothing. They acknowledged Michigan State was the better team. They said they got the better of us. They're helping guys up off the field the entire game. Tip your cap to them. That's a classy group, and, I mean, obviously no surprise coming from an institution like Stanford, but it was a pleasure playing a school of that caliber in the Rose Bowl. Obviously a pleasure getting the victory, but what a good group of guys, a good organization, a good program over in Palo Alto. Happy to meet them in a national stage like this. I hope we do it again soon. I really do. I hope these two teams meet sooner rather than later because it was a great battle of wills. And thank goodness Michigan State was feeling some type of way, and they came out on top with the big, big, big win. All right. For Current Sports, this has been Matt Ludke filling in for Al Martin. Thank you, Mark D'Antonio. Thank you, Pat Narduzzi. Thanks to Jim Bowman, Dave Warner, the whole gang, Connor Cook, Kyler Ellsworth, everybody. Thank you, Michigan State, for making this a magical season to keep up with. We will be back tomorrow. Hopefully, Al will be in studio. Let's hope. Hopefully, there's no flight delays or anything. For Al, for Aaron, for Alex, for station manager Peter Ward, for everyone here at WKAR, you have been listening to WKAR East Lansing, WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. Go out, enjoy the win. Put your roses on the trees if you still have them in your house. Hopefully you haven't thrown them out yet. I don't know. Enjoy the win. Savor it. Watch the highlights a couple times today. Take care. Have a safe and happy Thursday. And yeah, I guess I'll say it. Be easy, people.